Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Rob Schneider.
And I'm Kevin David Thomas.
You done checking those emails, Kev? Is that
I know,
what's going
I'm
on
like,
over
dear
there?
Dear Diary.
Once no, again, I'm trapped with Rob.
I was looking up, I knew that they just announced another show that was coming to the Broadway, and I was looking it up so that we could talk about it.
What was it? You don't
remember? Well, I know it was Angels in America is one of them that is, in fact, transferring. But I thought there was a musical that was announced, but now I honestly cannot remember for the life of me.
A new musical coming our way?
But John Stamos will star in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory in concert at the Hollywood Bowl.
I saw that with Ingrid Michaelson.
That's interesting. And she's making the rounds these days.
She is indeed. And the kid from Stranger Things, which I'm obsessed with now.
Oh, so you are watching that show.
Yeah, I finally did.
So good.
It really is fantastic.
Oh, it really is.
I think we were talking about this, but I have a tendency. Kevin and I were asking, how do we relax? And I said, usually I put on an old television show that makes me feel, you know, warm and fuzzy and comfortable, like The Lucy Show.
Naturally.
Or Here's Lucy.
Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, yeah.
Always. That's a comfort. That is like comfort late night TV when you're like, I don't know what to watch. Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, but what I love on Murder, She Wrote is that she brought in so many of her former theatrical
Tom Bosley.
Colleagues.
Hi, Tom.
Oh, that's Fiorello.
Yeah.
That's Mayor Cora Hoover Hooper and Mayor Fiorello H. LaGuardia.
Exactly.
Now, if they only had Frank Gorshin in there,
hello.
It would have been a Jimmy. It would have been three mayors. That's what we're really looking
that's
for.
That's right.
That's exactly
good
right.
Old Jimmy.
Have you ever seen the episode where you can actually see her cue cards in the frame?
No.
Okay, so I don't know if they still have this on Netflix, but I'm going to send it out there for our listeners to take a look at. It's a Murder, She Wrote episode. It's where she goes to Universal Studios to solve a murder in the Psycho House.
Of course.
True story. And when she finds the guy who did it, there's that big confrontation scene at the end. You know what? Where she's always like, I know you did it. And he like pulls out a gun and he's like, no one's ever going to know now.
Yeah, like
and just
very
as he points
Scooby-Doo.
The gun. Yeah,
yeah.
Very
I
would have
gotten away with it. I went for you major kids.
And then Tom Bosley runs in.
Right.
And is like, I got everything under control here, Mrs. Fletcher. But in this one scene, you see the person holding the cue cards for her.
The person?
The person over the gentleman's shoulder, and you see the cue cards.
Oh, my goodness.
And I've been obsessed with this. Now, when I go onto Netflix, that episode is still there, but they have cropped.
No.
So look for the two shot. Look for the shot with the two of them in the same shot. And they cropped it out. But I think if you have it on the DVD, it might still be there. I hesitate to ask you what I'm going to ask you, so I don't think I will ask you. It was a question about working with her in A Little Night Music, but I won't ask
no,
you.
No, go. Yeah, go.
Was there any assistance beyond her own memory?
That's a really... So Lansbury had done a couple other plays before A Little Night Music. She had done Deuce.
Yes.
She had done Blithe Spirit. And for both of those, she had assistance in her ear. And by assistance, we should clarify as it's not like she had like a running track of the dialogue that was going on in her ear while this play was going on. But what she had was a stage manager off stage who's on book. The lady who did it always was named Mary McLeod, who's a dancer, former dancer.
Yes.
And she was hired. Mary's now a stage manager and Broadway shows. But Mary was hired for Little Night Music to do this exact same function so that Angela could have the earpiece on. But Angela did not need it. And so she was able to, for the most part, memorize the show effectively. And she didn't use it. And she was very proud that she didn't have to use it. And so Mary did not. Mary would be on book for her during previews, I think. But really,
but never used it.
No, never had to use it. And so, of course, when Stritch joined, there was absolutely no way in hell that Stritch was going to use that earpiece if Lansbury had not used it as well. But I will tell you, as many people know that saw Little Night Music in the second half of the run, that perhaps Stritch maybe could have used the earpiece because...
Don't give it to me.
She famously... Because we did have a prompter downstage left for the entire run, all the way to the end. And she definitely... we would turn down the monitor during liaisons because it was so... Like, she would get off and you couldn't function because all you would do was listen to, like... Cause it, and some people, like, loved it. Some people went to see the show for Stritch to be Stritch in those moments. But when you're on stage and someone goes up on a line, it is, like... It is... horrifying a little bit and scary and kind of magical at the same time.
I think, I can't believe I'm going to say this, I think I'd rather have an actor with an earpiece than the consistent stopping of a show.
And then it's like, well, then how do you, you know, the earpiece thing is a very delicate thing because think about it. You're on book. We have a relationship. Like, you know me very, very well. I'm the older octogenarian actor, let's say. And so I know you're there in my ear. But it's like you have to know how long a pause is so long for you to know that I don't know my line, you know, or am I just acting, or is it annoying, you know? So that's a really it's an interesting thing that
I'd work out a signal where I just bash my ear.
Well, there's that famous story during Legend, sorry, but
oh yes, that's
Legend,
what I was just gonna bring up.
The James
up. Yes.
Kirkwood play that I was my one of my first favorite things. Mary Martin famously, this is the 80s, had an earpiece, but famously, do the story in the book where like Carol's like trying to talk to her and Mary goes, "What?" And Carol says her line again, but really Mary was saying "what" to the person who was speaking into her ear. She was like, "What?" And Carol then says, she's like, says her line, "I said go over to the," you know, like, ooh, that's.
I heard a story very similar. I don't think it was Mary Martin. It was somebody in the early 80s that they were just starting to use earpieces, but it kept, and it was at the Amundsen Theater in LA where I think Legends also got started.
Yeah.
And the Amundsen is somewhat close to where the airport is. Like you can, it's downtown LA. So planes would fly overhead. And originally what would happen is that the plane would fly overhead and the earpiece would pick up the cockpit.
No way.
So I can't remember what play, I feel like it was Detective Story or something like big melodrama.
Okay.
And like was an old celebrated movie actor and his line was something along the lines of like, you know, "And I know that Joe is the murderer." And he literally went, "And I know Joe is the murderer. We're coming in at a 45 degree angle." And everyone looked at him, and they tried to give him the next line. And he
was like,
"We have high tailwinds coming out of the northeast."
But flaps left, we're going down.
But fully committed, like fully committed to
like
this.
Like not even, bless his little heart.
And Elaine Stritch tells that really funny story in At Liberty when she was doing The Women, and there was a prompter. I can't remember who the actress was, who was behind the sofa, but they didn't tell any of the other actors that the prompter was going to be hidden behind the sofa.
Yeah.
So she crossed the stage behind a sofa and saw a woman laying on the floor, and she was like, "Jesus Christ."
Of course, Stritch, always living in the moment, no matter what, would react to seeing a human being upstage and behind a couch if she didn't know
on
was
the
gonna
floor.
Be there. Wait, did you guys know someone's here? Totally, can totally see that. Good.
Age,
I get it. Like, because you still want to work, you still want to, you know, do your thing. And if it's just a line here and there, and sometimes you don't even need the prompter, but it's just a security thing. But didn't Al Pacino use it the last?
Al Pacino used it apparently for China Doll.
Do you need it for that? I mean, if it's just like
Bruce Willis used it for Misery.
Yeah. See, I'm a little. I don't want to say lazy.
No.
But it's like, why can't you memorize your you're of a certain age?
God forgive me if this is right. Was it Forrest Whitaker and Huey? They kept walking up to the water cooler, and there was a prompter at the water cooler on set. I can't remember if it's him or not. I feel really bad.
It was a play.
I could be totally wrong. Could be totally wrong. I'll check it out. But no, there was when they just did Huey. The actor kept walking to the water cooler.
Yeah, I think we should
and
be
there was a prompter
judicious
there.
With this magical device. But
I'm okay. Listen, if it's an older actor, if it's like 90-year-old, you know, Betty White, and they're going to put her in a show, and she needs a little help, That's fine.
Yeah, we want to see the legend on
but
stage.
But when you're a young, strapping
a young buck
individual,
who has had roots in the stage before,
you should not have to be relying on
you know Denzel
prompter.
Washington's not going to have one for Iceman Cometh.
Oh, God, no. Or did Nathan Lane have one for Iceman Cometh? No, of course not. You sit down and you do the work. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Or maybe there's something else going on that I'm not aware mm-hmm. of, but I don't think we should be But for older actors, it's weird. I'd rather them have the earpiece than...
Than, like, flounder around on stage like poor Sweet Stritch did whenever, but...
But then it got to be her thing. It got to be...
Well, by default, because there was no other option, but literally there was not a single show where she you know, and it was charming and beautiful,
sure.
and that was the way she was. But the fact of the matter is there was not a single... There's not a single show that she nailed every single lyric and nor could you blame her. I mean, she was 85 at the time, 86, you know?
Absolutely
and
not.
And all those little scenelets can be confusing. But God bless the Frederica and the butler, because by the end she'd be like, "Where was I?" Not even in liaisons, just in that was her like go to ad lib, where she didn't know where she was, and then the little Frederica would be like, "Grandma, weren't you going to tell me about why the summer night smiles three times?"
Shut up, kid.
Right.
Oh, God. Get away from me.
And then she'd always be like, "That's right. I was," like, you know, the audience will lose it. I mean, okay. Favorite things. Hi, everybody.
I thought that was so cute, Kevin. You're going away from me.
You know, I'm curious what friends that are listening to us in your earbuds or in your car or wherever you may be. We're curious what your favorite thing is. I feel like we never ask everybody what's something that we haven't considered yet.
We usually ask, but everyone usually says Broadway Backstory or The Ensemblist.
As far as podcasts. Oh,
they go, "Not you guys." It's like Patrick Hines.
Yeah, all right.
And we just go, okay.
That's a favorite thing.
I would say Patrick is a favorite thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say The Ensemblist is a favorite
thing. Oh, indeed. For sure. I was thinking like other people's items that they enjoy. Like what's a book that you know out there? What's a clip, a YouTube clip that we haven't considered yet? That's what I mean.
Oh, yeah. We do get wonderful suggestions from a lot of our listeners, which is exciting. Keep them coming in.
I know. Yeah. I would like to hear more of what you think. What's your favorite things?
I remember if you join Patreon, you can tell us and we'll talk about it on one of the episodes. Because we are strapped for cash. I'm kidding. But I'm not. Kevin was literally prostituting himself outside of McDonald's this morning.
Rob
I saw
just,
it.
Sold his just sold his T-shirt to somebody. He's actually not wearing a button-up for the first time ever.
I feel really uncomfortable. I'm wearing a
He's
T-shirt.
He's actually wearing a T-shirt.
I hate them.
That's how he was going to meet Pat Birch today.
Ugh. Oh, yeah. That's why we're doing an episode now is because Pat Birch forgot that we had an interview today.
And she's coming tomorrow.
She's coming tomorrow. We'll hear all about it.
But it's not Helen Gallagher.
It's not. Oh, my Aww. God. You know,
Have you tried calling her?
Well, you know, I got it. So once
you
again.
You guys know that I know this is like the.
This was the day we were going to stop the
avid
podcast.
Avid listeners know that there was about a year ago, we were so excited to go to the great Broadway leading lady, Helen Gallagher's apartment. And we did. She's not even an octogenarian. She's a, what is it called? A nonagenarian. She's in her 90s. And we went to her apartment. We had such an amazing chat. It was so fun. She told us all about these great shows in the 50s and 60s. And it didn't record. So we call that our Helen Gallagher episode. But the problem is that we want to go back and talk to her again. But if she remembers talking to us, she's going to be pissed.
This killed me. This was literally the day I looked at Kevin, because I'll tell you what happened. We the Helen Gallagher thing didn't work. We lost a wonderful interview, and it really was a wonderful interview. We lost a wonderful interview. Then we went over to Charles Strauss's house. Didn't record there, so we had to literally record it on our iPhones. And then we had a phone conversation with a guest who was very it was just rude to us.
Was that Lee?
Yes. Yeah. It was just very
like he was
with
just
us.
little sassy at us.
And
he
at
was
the
not
end,
the only time we've ever like gone off an interview and been like, well, lost that one.
I'll tell you though, at the end of that day, I looked at Kevin and I'm like, we're not doing this anymore. I was done. I was like, we are done. We are not doing this anymore. We come back and we come back.
We did.
We came back.
We
stronger.
Learned a little more.
We learned a little more. Like, always have your iPhone ready to go and try not to waste Helen Gallagher's time. But so question, have we come back to Helen Gallagher? Yeah, we have a lot of people that keep, because we've mentioned it a few times, a lot of people who message us and say, can you go back and ask again? I'm going to be honest with you. I did call her a while ago and she's not returned my phone call. I didn't tell her why. I just said, can we do a follow-up interview in which the questions will be the same exact as the ones you've heard the first time? But this was in January, so maybe she forgot. Maybe she's forgotten some of the questions. But she was
maybe
great.
Try again. Maybe she'll forget.
I'll give her another call and beg her. Oh, God.
It'll be like our quest for Helen. Our quest
to
for Gallagher.
Follow that quest. I'll follow that star.
Oh, well, happy
to
throwback
her Upper
Thursday,
West Side apartment.
My singer, my Barry Tenor. Robert.
Hey, before we begin my favorite things, can I tell you what just came out on Playbill?
What did?
They release every year, the Educational Theater Association has revealed its annual list of the most produced full-length plays, full-length musicals in U.S. high schools.
Oh, you love this list.
I do. So I'm going to ask you, Kevin, we'll start with the plays really quickly because they gave us 10. What is the most produced play in high schools?
I actually know this because someone was just talking about this the other day and I can't remember where I was.
It was Peter Felicia.
Right, Peter, because he was talking about how John Cariani is like the richest actor on Broadway, not because of all of the most amazing work that this man does, but he wrote the play Almost Maine.
He did, and Almost Maine is the number one full-length play produced in high schools. You want to guess number two, maybe? Or what else do you think might be on the list of 10? And you can include like Shakespeare as well. It's not just published stuff.
I honestly really could not tell you. Almost Maine, I know I'm familiar with, but I come from a high school that didn't even do plays in my high school.
You did musicals?
We only did one musical a year. That was it.
Oh, yeah.
Consequently, that's why I know more about musicals than plays, because I really just dug into musicals by default. So I couldn't even tell you. I don't think high schools are doing Doubt. I don't think
they're doing
all of the big hits of the last season. Like, they're not doing, you know, like The Humans.
No, but I'll tell you, but here's the list. Here's the 10. Ready? Number 10 is Our Town.
Oh, yeah. Classic.
9 is Macbeth.
Oh, 9 is Macbeth.
8 is A Christmas Carol. 7 is 12 Angry Jurors. Not 12 Angry Men, 12 Angry Jurors. So it can be both genders. Peter and the Star Catcher is at 6.
Oh.
Alice in Wonderland is at 5.
Interesting.
You Can't Take It With You is at number 4. The Crucible is 3. And A Midsummer Night's Dream is number 2.
Well, good for Shakespeare.
Yeah, good
up
for
there.
Shakespeare. Now, full-length musicals, we have 10. Can you tell me what the number one most produced full-length musical is in high schools?
Grease.
Grease is on there, but it's number 10.
Bye Bye Birdie.
Not on the list.
Fiddler on the Roof.
Not on the list.
What?
Think contemporary. These are really contemporary.
Adam's Family.
Congrats.
Seriously?
Adam's Family is the number one produced full-length musical in high school.
Because I'm just thinking, of course, it's the shows that are flashy and like that maybe weren't the biggest hits ever.
No.
But Hairspray's got to be on there.
No, it's not.
What?
Not on there. It's
Legally Blonde
not,
is definitely on
not
there.
Not on there. Not
what?
On there.
That Boy. I mean,
not
what?
A Bad Boy. No, listen to this list. So number 10 was Grease. Number 9 was Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, yes.
8 is Into the Woods.
Ooh.
7 is The Wizard of Oz. 6 is Little Mermaid.
Oh.
5 is Cinderella. 4 is Seussical.
Seussical,
yeah.
Seussical is
number
4? Number
4.
Of high schools in the country?
Of high schools in the country. Number 3 is Shrek. 2 is Beauty and the Beast, and number 1 is The Addams Family. So very, very contemporary, family friendly.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
I remember, I think when I was in high school, like the number, it was usually like Bye Bye Birdie was up there and Once Upon a Mattress
First
was
show
up
I ever
there.
Saw, I believe, because I was going to see a high school production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now it's The Addams Family, which is awesome. Congratulations
well, that is very,
to Andrew
very
Lippa
interesting.
For...
But you make a good pretty penny when you get that done by when you have the most high schools doing
I won't tell you who told me this story, but I was talking to a very famous director of a musical, and the musical had a very family friendly idea and flopped miserably on Broadway, and I said and they were like, yeah, we knew there were problems in the rehearsal room and stuff, but we realized that the name was so popular that it was going to flop on Broadway.
Right.
But we knew that it was going to make a lot of money in the regional theater and in high schools.
Little Mermaid? It was like a flop on Broadway.
It wasn't Little Mermaid, but I was talking to somebody who was involved with the Little Mermaid production, and I was saying, you must be excited about Frozen coming in. I said, because that's going to be a guaranteed moneymaker. And the person said to me, absolutely not. They said, ever since Little Mermaid, everyone at Disney is so incredibly cautious.
Yeah.
We thought that Little Mermaid was going to be a huge, gigantic hit, and it did not turn out to be so.
Nope.
So they're a little bit more cautious nowadays. Although they did invest in a very large investment in a remodeling the St. James Theater.
Well, indeed.
I mean, I don't know if that's all them or if that's Drew Jamson or I don't know.
I imagine there's a deal of some sort.
Of course.
You
of course.
But because Drew Jamson definitely gets the they get the to walk away at the end with the theater. That is, so they're pushing back the at back of the theater, folks.
More space,
is that correct? Yeah. So that a lot of these Broadway theaters, I know we've talked about, I think, with Peter, but these Broadway theaters are very tiny. When you go on tour, if you go on tour, the theaters across the United States, those old vaudeville theaters, and those old, they're huge houses. They're massive with big backstage, you know, spaces. The theaters on Broadway, there's very little room backstage, very little room in the wings, very little room going upstage all the way. So places like the St. James had to get with the times so that bigger shows could use this big gargantuan house. They have to make the stage actually bigger.
And I think that's what one of the reasons that Jordan Roth was saying he did. He said it wasn't so much for Frozen, but that there were so many shows that wanted to come to the St. James, but the backstage wasn't equipped properly. So he said, I don't want to keep losing shows.
Right. Because it's a big house. It's
a huge house.
It's a huge house. Big, but
yeah.
It's where Oklahoma started. Yeah.
So interesting. That's really interesting. Yeah. Now we've talked about old people. We've talked about young people. And now we're going to talk about our favorite things. So, Kevin, what is your favorite thing for?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Today.
I have a book.
A book.
This is a book that I can't believe I never knew about.
If you fancy coloring books, and many people do.
I have a new one for you, Rob.
Oh, look at you tying in that lyric.
So I discovered this writer because of one of my other previous favorite things.
Ooh.
I talked about Dorothy Fields before. And that Dorothy Fields sort of biography, you know, exploration of her career by a woman named Deborah Grace Winer, who just recently left the 42nd Street or the 92nd Street Y.
Oh, yes.
The lyricist and lyric series. And she's definitely she'd be someone that we should talk to at some point because she's been definitely a champion of the history of musical theater.
Indeed, she has.
She really has. And I'm sad to tell you that I did not know this until these favorite things these books that I found of hers. So this is a book that was published in 1993, and I would really love an update on it. But this book is basically our podcast.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. In fact, I'll get to that in a minute. But there's a couple reasons why it's a really interesting book. But this book is like what 25 years old from right now, ish, and it's called "Sing Out, Louise: 150 Stars of the Musical Theater Remember 50 Years on Broadway."
Oh yeah.
So what this book is, it's so interesting. Now again, the reason why I think it's interesting that it's in 1993 published is that because you're getting 50 years from 93, not right now. So what she's able to do is she was able to talk to a lot of these older stars and legends that are no longer with us, but hear about what it was. Basically, this book is like, what was it like living in the golden age and what was it like to work in New York?
Amazing.
But you get it from a firsthand perspective view from these performers, writers, producers, directors who lived it at the time. So so like I said, it is our podcast, but in this other format, because she interviews a lot of the same people that we have interviewed 25 years later, Rob.
Oh, really?
And the coolest thing about it is that we are here. Some of the same stories that we heard exactly from Anita Gillette, from Joan Copeland, from Leroy Reams, many stories from Leroy, from Karen Morrow. They're all in this book.
Oh,
and
wow.
Some of them tell the exact same stories that they told us, which
amazing.
I find actually very interesting. And then a lot of them are completely different stories that we didn't even know about different, you know, we're going to talk to Carol Demos today. She's mentioned prominently in this book.
Yeah.
She does a lot. So yes, you get like a living account of the day-to-day life of a performer in the Golden Age. There's another book that was published about 8 years ago called Making It on Broadway.
Yes,
which
I feel
like essentially does this. Jody Langell, I think is her name, interviewed contemporary people, younger folk who are on Broadway, and just what it was like. What's your routine? You go to the gym before the show, you know. But this is different than that. This is people looking back on their careers and specific events that happened to them. Gwen Vernon, Barbara Cook, Carol Channing, Dorothy Loudon, Stritchy, they all have first-hand accounts in this book. Sometimes it's straight first-person accounts, like it's quoted and they're just telling the story. Sometimes and by the way, that's co-written by a man named Dennis McGovern, just to give him full credit. But sometimes they write, they do commentary on what they were talking about. So you'll get first-hand quotes, you'll get commentary, and then there's also fun things in the book that she always includes, like pictures of people, letters that were written, little notes that had, you know. And so some of the chapters, to give you an example of how this is organized, is situations wanted, trying to get the work in theater, you know, where people are trying to get the job. Then there's losing the job. Carol DeMoss talks about that with No No Nanette. And then stars are people too. How the stars, the stories of how some of these stars, like Katharine Hepburn and Coco, you know, their trials and tribulations making them human. Closing Too Soon, a chapter about like Sadie Thompson and other shows that were perhaps didn't get the chance that they deserved. So anyway, I read it on vacation and I was done in 3 hours or so because it was just such an easy read and really fun to hear. Some stories that perhaps have not always been told.
I have never read the book. And now I'm going to pick up a copy.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
It's fun. And it hasn't been, I don't think to my knowledge, it has been republished or anything like
or
that.
Or updated or anything. Yeah.
I don't think, I think it's just, you got to get that original 1993 published copy of Sing Out Louise, 150 Stars of the Musical Theater, Remember 50 Years on the Broadway.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
and I'm going to
really,
go pick it up.
Really fun book. She writes good stuff. And I think that the work that Deborah Grace Winer is doing for musical theater is really commendable. So thank you. I've never met you, Deborah, but I thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if any of the stories told in the book differ from what we were told on air.
Pretty much spot on.
Really?
Like, I mean, what we have discovered is that legends oftentimes have like their roster of stories that they are.
Yes.
We're only in our 30s, but I have stories that I probably told one too many times on this podcast. You know what I mean? But that we have our go-tos. And I think some of these, especially with Leroy and Anita, they were their go-to stories. But it was, I thought it was really fun to hear it said a different way or, you know, to...
I have not realized that the art of storytelling is really an art because we've sat down with some people, Jim Brochu, Anita Gillette, Leroy Reams, just to name a few, are individuals where the story that they tell, which if you and I were telling a story of something that happened in our own personal lives, it would be filled with ums and ahs and misinformation and maybe mispronunciations. They have orchestrated their anecdotes in a way that I've never seen anyone else do before.
You can tell they've refined them over the years.
Yes.
and figured out the best way to communicate them and to get to the good stuff, the punchline.
The stories, you know, to dine out on.
It's true. You know? There are set stories that I think people are that they know that other people want to hear, you know?
But, I mean, it's almost memorized. There are a few of them that I've heard the story 90 million times, or I'll overhear them telling the story 90 million times, and they choke up in the same place.
Yep.
They wipe a tear away in the same place. It's I don't know if it's calculated. I don't know what it is, but I find it so absolutely fascinating. And I'm hoping, Rob, you're right. That when we get to be that age, that we will be able to be as articulate storytellers as they are.
I hope so. Maybe diversify the portfolio and have many different stories to tell.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Right?
Fingers crossed. We got to live more life. We got to live
All
more
right,
life.
Let's go. Let's
okay.
Get, bye. I'm out of here.
When are you leaving me?
No, I'm kidding.
You're going to go into the building across the street that's being constructed?
Our building that we've been watching, this building across the way, we've been watching it go up since we started doing interviews in this Shetler studio over a year ago. And now there's no blue sky. It's just building.
I feel like the building is sort of a metaphor for our podcast, which is when on the first day we came in, it was just an empty, barren field.
That's sweet.
And as we've climbed higher and higher in our success on this podcast, the building is getting higher and higher and more stable and more solidified.
You're cracking me up today in this podcast. Now, listeners, I heard from a lot of you that you could tell when Rob and I were back in the same room together for the last couple episodes. Yes. You were very excited about that. Yes. I have to tell you, if you can tell that Rob has like an NPR feel to him today because he's listening to us talk with headphones on. But so I'm looking at him and he's got headphones on, but I don't. I'm just talking like into my microphone. But every time I'm like loud and obnoxious and Rob is like very like, hello. It's because you hear your voice in the headphones, the cans, as they say.
I'm wearing my cans today. They're really lovely. Let's go and talk to Ashnaki Babafi to tell us a little bit about what's going on in Washington, D.C. You like
what's
that?
What's that old lady that always does all the news in Washington? She has her own show, the Diane Rehm, where she's always I got that Rob Schneider. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? The Diane Rehm show? Please tell me you do.
I've never.
I'm not making fun of her. I am, but it's I'm full on making fun of her. And it's but she does. She sounds so old.
No, Kevin, singling out someone's voice for being idiosyncratic is not making fun of someone.
A combination of Diane Rehm, Kevin Hurtbard, and Bob Kane.
You're so pretty. Kevin is laughing. Kevin did an impression today, and he's so proud of himself. I'm always waiting for Kevin to bust out an impression.
What's your favorite thing, Rob?
Well, my favorite thing is, I feel like I should do it in the NPR voice, but I'll get annoying after a while.
No, it's good. I love it.
My favorite thing is to go home and curl up in a warm blanket and read a nice book on liberal guilt.
Oh,
and then I flagellate myself
exciting.
While watching images of Rachel Maddow and Hillary Clinton on MSNBC.
That sounds like one of the most exciting things I've ever heard in my entire life.
Thank you very much. And then I like to read a nice article by the New York Times and have a nice vegan meal from Blue Apron.
It's thrilling.
And then I think about all the people in the world who have less than me. I don't do anything, but I like to think about it. Is that it?
Yeah.
No, my
if anyone's still listening, I'm excited. I'm sure you're excited to hear what Rob's favorite thing is.
Literally making room on their app for the ensemblist right now. They're just getting rid of us. Sorry, guys.
And we're not even wasted like Broadway Wasted are.
I wish we could be wasted like Broadway Wasted. They have such fun over
there.
They
do have, and they play games and stuff.
I love all the podcasts.
I do too.
I do. I really do. Somebody asked me, they're like, oh, do you have a favorite? And I'm like, no, because what I love about all the podcasts that are in the theater community is each of them offers something so uniquely different. What we do versus Broadway Wasted versus The Ensemblist versus Patrick Hines, it's all so different and it's so wonderful. And I keep thinking wouldn't it have been wonderful if we had podcasts like that when we were growing up?
Don't even get me started, Rob.
Wouldn't that have been great,
though? No, yes. Are you kidding me?
Can you imagine like an Ensemblist episode about like the group from Titanic? Or, you know, like Broadway backstory where, you know, Patrick had people still alive from the original Guys and Dolls.
If the cast of Floyd Collins went on Broadway Wasted, cast of Violet, I would die. I would just listen to that episode over and over and over again.
Oh, me too. Me too. Well, let's get on our time machines. But we're so appreciative of all the great work that all the podcasts do. We love them all.
It's true.
And all of them love me. And the system works. Okay, great. That's I'm done with my Chicago.
Raindrops on roses. All right, Rob,
I know
is it?
People are asking for new theme songs, but I'm not going to give you a new theme song because I really love Tennessee Ernie Ford singing to us. Okay, so what do we have here? A continuation from last week's favorite thing. If you remember, we were talking about, don't be too excited now. We were talking about
List.
Peter. Sorry, Kevin. Okay. We can't all bow at the altar of Deborah Grace Winer every week.
Go ahead.
You're going to read like her recipes
Go
next.
Go ahead.
Deborah Grace Winer makes a pot roast, which is pretty amazing. Let me read you the recipe right now.
Here we go. No, you were reading a list of the...
So anyway, we were talking about, was about 20 years ago, the great Peter Felicia, who we've had on the show many times, wrote a list saying what he thought the 100 greatest musical episodes in musical theater was. At the time, he was inspired by TV Guide. They wrote like the 100 best episodes in sitcom or television history. And so he did the same thing. So last week, we did part one, which was 100 through 50. And now I'm going to give you 50 through number one and read through that list.
Here we go.
Now, let me ask you, Kevin, what do you think is on number one? What do you think is the number one greatest musical theater moment that Peter Felicia suggests?
All before the year 1998.
Yeah, so you can't really go. You can't really go into the 2000s. So what was the greatest musical theater moment?
I'm going to guess perhaps Curly singing off stage at the opening of Oklahoma might be on there.
Okay, so Kevin is saying that it's going to be Curly's off stage singing in Oklahoma, which we have not seen.
I'm going to give that the top
in musical theater
10
before.
Or top 5 at least.
Okay, here we go. 50 is the Sadie Hawkins ballet from Little Abner. 49 is When I'm Not Near the Girl I Love from Finian's Rainbow. 48, A Little Girl from Little Rock. Then I'm Still Here. Brush Up Your Shakespeare, and I'm Telling You I'm Not Going. Slaughter on 10th Avenue, You Got Trouble. The Quintet from West Side Story. Brotherhood of Man, Who Wouldn't Dance with You from Grand Hotel. That's at 40. Going into the 30s now, 39, On a Sunday by the Sea from High Button Shoes.
Oh.
Right?
Wow.
Right? I'm going to wash that man right out of my hair. When a shopper says, from the Rothschilds, sit down, you rock in the boat. Everybody ought to have a maid. Willkommen. 33 I thought was interesting. It's intermission from A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. Pseudolus's death-defying first act ending. That's the last word we hear at the end of Act 1 of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, which is pretty clever. The bench scene from Carousel.
Oh, yeah, classic.
Mame and Mame. Number 30 is I'm the Greatest Star. 29, Miss Marmalstein. Bess, You Is My Woman Now. We'll Take a Glass Together. Once in Love with Amy. 25 is Laurie Makes Up Her Mind from Oklahoma. 24 is
The
Dream Ballet. 24 is Adelaide's Lament. 23 is Comedy Tonight. 21 is Tomorrow. Oh, sorry, 22 is Tomorrow from Annie. 21 is I'm an Ordinary Man. Number 20 is Beautiful Girls from Follies. We're going into the teens here. 19. Oh, What a Beautiful Morning from Oklahoma at 19.
Oh, I'm off.
Old Man River at 18. I'm Flying from Peter Pan at 17.
Oh, yeah.
Dance at the Gym from West Side Story is 16.
Wait, have we done the telephone thing from Bye Bye Birdie?
Not yet. Okay. Not yet.
All right.
15 is the Act 1 finale of The Music Man. 14, The Rain in Spain from My Fair Lady. 13, I'm Going Back from Bells Are Ringing. Number 12. What was that sound?
I was just a little surprised of all the songs when Bells Are Ringing. I don't know. It's The Party's Over. It could have been on there. It could have been Just in Time. It could have been,
He gives little justifications for each of these. I just chose not to read them. But for I'm Going Back, he says, the ultimate 11 o'clock number, and to think they didn't have it when they went out of town.
Wow. Yeah, okay.
So maybe that's why.
Yeah, that's 11 o'clock number.
12 is Old Fashioned Wedding from Annie Get Your Gun.
Ah, yes.
11 is Hello Dolly from Hello Dolly. Now, here we are, the last 10.
Oh,
the
drum
bottom
roll.
10.
I'm fascinated by these.
Number 10 is June 28th through July 4th in 1776. And he says, just as you're thinking that there is no United States of America and they're breaking the news to us in a palatable way as possible, i.e. through a musical, the book makes the impossible seem suddenly possible.
Wow.
And that is true. If you watch the end of 1776, you are glued to the edge of your seat, but you know perfectly well that they're going to sign.
I love 1776.
Yeah. It's pretty. Yeah. I was going to say pretty fucking amazing.
It is. Well, the movie actually is very close to the stage version. That's very,
very close.
Rare. Anyway,
very close.
Keep going.
Number 9 is Can't Help Loving That Man from Showboat.
Ah, yes.
8 is Everything's Coming Up Roses from Gypsy.
Of course.
7 is All I Need Is the Girl from Gypsy.
Huh.
And he says Louise is so smitten with Tulsa that she can't help join the number. How happy we are that she's finally getting some appreciation. How devastated we'll be in the scene that follows.
That's true.
Which is actually very brilliant. I mean, I think the Book of Gypsy is perfection.
It's just perfection.
Number 6 is Do Re Mi from Sound of Music.
Mm.
Number 5 is Rose's Turn from Gypsy. So here we are, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Number All 4. Right. Olive Stanton stands up and sings. This is from The Cradle Will Rock.
Okay.
So they had Stanton, get up and say. So this is what the moment in Cradle Will Rock when, if you don't know what we're talking about, take a look at the movie, which is fabulous, about the Cradle Will Rock experience. 3, 2, and 1. Okay.
Right.
So now that we know that what you guessed was
not on the top three,
what do you think might be number 1?
Bye Bye Birdie. Something from Bye Bye Birdie.
That Telephone Hour,
yeah,
which
probably
is pretty brilliant. Okay.
Gower Champion.
Number 3.
Or 42nd Street. Something in 42nd
okay.
Street.
Okay. Number 3. Who's That Woman from Follies?
Oh, wow.
Both aged and young dancers show their big number. Number 2. The Small House of Uncle Tom from The King and
of
I.
Of course.
Number 1. I'll read the description and then you can tell me if you know what he's talking about, okay? The description is, every emotion a new father can have is right here, set to a stirring melody that turns tender on a dime. Every emotion a new father can have is right here. And the song is, it's a song. number one greatest musical theater episode according to Peter Felicia?
I don't.
Soliloquy.
Oh, of course.
Soliloquy from Carousel. Wow. He thinks is the number one greatest musical theater episode.
Wow.
How exciting is that?
That is good.
So it's a great list. So anyway, one of the reasons that I keep bringing it up is because I keep, and I mentioned this in the last podcast, the list was so influential for me because as I was growing up and I didn't have a lot of musical theater history at my fingertips, I would look at the list and if there was a show I did not know, I would go out and research the show so I knew exactly what he was talking about. But the list is 20 years old now at this point. So what other moments from the past 20 years mm-hmm. would appear on that list? And I'm also surprised that The Telephone Hour was not on the list because I think that is brilliant staging.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm trying to think from like the next, from the past 20 years, what would you have put on there?
Well, I know a moment that I will always remember is in that Def West production of Big River in 2003. I will always remember such a great actor, Michael McElroy, putting his hand out. And when Huck puts his hand on his to show the raft, it's this huge, big, beautiful black hand. And then his little white fingers on top as like the thing in it. And then them moving their hands like as if it's a raft. I thought that was like
oh, that's brilliant.
And then also in that same production, I would probably say that production, but that moment where I'm waiting for the light to shine, I will never forget. Did anyone see this when they're like, because the whole thing with this production was that it was in sign language and sung. It was simultaneous languages going on at the same time. And then there was that moment where they're like big climax of the song and the final chorus, and all of a sudden the music and everyone stopped and all they just, it gives me the chills right now. It chokes me up. Mm. And they just signed it in that whole auditorium was completely silent and all you could hear was their movements. And then it was like the most beautiful. It was so stunning. It was
That's
so
incredible.
So that was a moment just specifically, but I'm sure there's like, obviously there's like Parade and there's like Ragtime and there's Once on This Island. And I mean, there's so many great, what was something you would say right off the bat?
Well, you know, it's so funny. I was just thinking that, like, what are you laughing at?
Because it's like,
is it the headphones?
No, I'm just thinking. It just sounds so like you sound so like NPR.
I'm telling you, I didn't sleep a lot last night, so I'm a little sluggish today. I'm a little sluggish.
You're fine. Go ahead. Sorry, I'm so sorry.
News from Washington.
Oh my God! Don't do it again.
Donald and Melania Trump will be starring in the Kennedy Center production of The Music Man. Donald will play Harold Hill.
I don't even want to talk about him on this.
Melania will be a trombone.
I don't want to talk about her either.
Okay. Up next. Where was I? Oh, you know what's so funny is a lot of the moments I was thinking of actually are off Broadway. Like I think and I don't think that qualified for Peter's list. I think it had to be a Broadway show, but like for example, in off Broadway, the I think Somewhere That's Green from Little Shop I think is such a stirring moment. I think that when Jamie and Kathy meet for the first time or sing together for the first time in the last 5 years is pretty magical. I'm sure you have moments from Violet.
Oh, of course.
Hairspray, I think Timeless to Me. I love Timeless to Me. Or Good Morning Baltimore, I think is one of the best opening numbers. Oh,
agreed.
Betrayed in The Producers.
Oh, yeah. Eartha Kitt in Wild Party.
Eartha Kitt's performance in Wild Party. I'm trying to think of what other things from the past.
Oh, falsettos, of course. Oh, things falsettos. From March of the Falsettos. You know.
Hamilton, I think the wedding, the whole wedding montage in Hamilton, I think is just absolutely breathtaking. Ring of Keys from Fun Home, I think would have to be in there somewhere.
Yeah,
what else are we forgetting, folks?
Light in the Piazza was
oh,
epic.
My God, yes.
There are moments in that score that are just so special.
The final countdown in Spelling Bee, when it comes down to the last two competitors, I think is a pretty brilliant moment in musical theater history because you're so invested at that point in the characters. I Believe from Book of Mormon, I think is hysterical and great. Think of these shows. Millie, Billy Elliot when he dances for the first time. There's so many great moments in musical theater in the past 20 years. So I'm hoping that Peter will. Ragtime. There was nothing from the opening from Ragtime alone. Just anything from Ragtime. My God. So there's so many things on there that I hope that Peter will come back and revise the list and give us the next few years or so that we've missed out on.
I know. That's fun.
That was great. That was awesome. So once again, I was concluding Peter Felicia's greatest 100 musical episodes. And Kevin?
I'd Sing Out Louise, a good book by Deborah Grace Winer and Dennis McGovern.
All right. Till next time.
Bye, everybody.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.